warm September evening.
Dr. Menakis?
Jill Johnson was babysitting for the two young children of a wealthy doctor.
Okay. Bye.
They told her where they would be and when they would be home. They told her everything she had to know, except what to do when a stranger calls.
Hello?
Have you checked the children?
What? Hello, could you get me the police?
Well, there's really nothing we can do about it down here.
Have you checked the children?
He's watching me through the windows.
Well, if he calls again, we can try to trace it.
Why haven't you checked the children?
Please, can't you help me? I'm all alone here. What do you want?
Your blood.
Leave me alone!
Jill, this is Sergeant Sacker. We've traced the call. It's coming from inside the house. Jill, just get out of that house.
And the terror just begins when a stranger calls.
For those who don't know what the fuck we're talking about, I have been talking for 5 hours with Anthony, the one and only Francis.
Glad to be back.
The other Francis. The other one's Coppola, but Francis.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Francis!
That I don't love my parents, but I wish I was a Coppola. Thank you.
Everyone
very much.
Does. Yeah. I'm told he has the best wine in Hollywood. Anyway.
It's pretty delicious. I buy it occasionally.
You better. Probably while watching a movie. It was a long time coming. We decided we were going to do this at Halloween, and then I fucked off. Anthony had a
Cameron crazy finally got his stuff together after putting me off all this time.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
I'm kidding, folks.
I was stalked and pranked by a serial killer, and I had to change my name 5 different times. But no, really, I had too much in the can. I don't know why I torture myself on a daily basis, but I do this. Fortunately, I actually like editing, so that's not the problem. The problem is just recording 5 things in one day, which is actually recommended. You get more content.
Hey, talking about what we love to talk about is great, and to have a listener base is worth it. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So we are talking about a movie made by none only than the co-founder of the largest shopping mall company in the United States. That's right, a Melvin Simon production. That is When a Stranger Calls, not Dial In for Murder, which I would often get the titles mixed up.
When a Stranger Calls, 1979, the original, folks.
Or mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, people ask you, is it a horror film? Yes. Well, I thought it was a murder mystery. Yes. Well, I thought it was a character study. Yes.
I thought it was an NBC picture. Yes.
Yeah.
But wasn't it by Columbia? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. It is all these things. And for my money, Cam.
Yes.
Can I call you Cam?
Yes.
For my
Cam
money.
Cam.
Cam Sully. For my money, even though it is horror, but it's more the character study, I think it's one of the great horror films of its day. To this day, the most frightening opening 20 minutes in my opinion, in cinema, not just horror, cinema history.
100%.
It's an amazing film.
Have you ever met anyone who knew about it but didn't know how it influenced other movies like Scream and other, you know, stalker movies?
I've met some. The influence, the whole opening of Scream is, well, the whole thing the killer does, and the killer in Scream is basically Tony Beckley's character
from right.
Stranger Calls. And the whole opening of the first Scream is an homage to the opening of Fred Walton's original. I've met people who aren't aware of its influence. And I think even as time goes on, people who are aware of its influence have to be jolted back to reminder of its influence, if that makes any sense.
No, totally. It totally even makes sense why, you know, Walton goes on to do other movies like April Fool's Day.
Which is a little cult classic in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, an underrated mystery thriller, The Rosary Murders, with Donald Sutherland and Charles Durning from When mm-hmm. a Stranger. I think it's a good, you've seen that one. I think yep. it's a good film. I think it's tight, a good mystery. I like it.
Yeah, he returned for the sequel, which is a rarity. Usually they would hire just a cheap, you know, Mulcahy, Stephen Hopkins type.
Yeah. Made for Showtime, by the way, the sequel.
I thought it was USA Network.
No, it's Showtime.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Don't make me question myself. Now I want to look it up.
Got the riff tracks treatment, yeah. But
that's too bad, because while it's nowhere near as strong as the original film,
I think they just wanted a goofy cable TV movie.
Yeah, it has its moments. I like Jill Sholin. I interviewed her way back, by the way.
Oh my god, dude! Did she have anything to say about this?
She liked it. She liked the. She, without me saying anything, realized or recognized that the script for her When a Stranger Calls wasn't as strong as the original. But she said she loved the opening. It's terrifying. And I agree. While it's not as terrifying as the original, it's mm-hmm. a great When a Stranger Calls the opening. And the yep. ending's a little silly. But who cares? I like it. I think it's fine. Totally. I have no problem with it. But yeah, you're right. It got the riff track state treatment. But hey, to be fair, so did Jaws. Sometimes they run out of movies to do for a while, and yeah. they do important ones. But no, when's the first time you saw When a Stranger Calls?
Actually very more recent. I know, oh. Shocker. I actually saw them out of order.
Oh, you saw the sequel first?
Yeah, I just... And again, I just always got it mixed up with Dial M for Murder, just the stalker movies, because I just would watch various other psycho thrillers just on repeat and
yeah,
get them from the thrift store and, you know, just see all other kinds of movies. But I was always a fan of Carol Kane, and just
me too.
She's gorgeous in this, but it's I think it did appear in a few different documentaries, and it was one of those is like, I need to really get off my fucking ass here. I don't think I've actually seen this movie.
Well, it's not fair for me, it's not fair how I saw it first. As we've talked about, as people know me, my dad ran a movie theater, and he played it, and he let me and my buddies go see it all the time. Yeah, well, it was a big hit, so it was there back in 79, so it was there for months. So he let me and my buddies come in and see it. I saw it a million times, but... I couldn't go in alone. I was 11 at the time. I couldn't go in alone to the theater, even though there's a big crowd and my dad's right out there. I couldn't do it. I had to bring buddies with me. I used to love whenever we'd go down to the theater to visit my dad, you know, like take him dinner or something.
Golly.
My mom and I, he'd be like, wait, listen. And it would be the big ending. And you would just hear this crowd of people scream bloody murder.
Yes.
When he pops, we'll get to the scene, but when he pops up at the end there.
Yeah. Isn't it wild how Carol Kane is in the Muppet movie with Charles Durning the same year as this one?
This is
so weird. How does that happen?
That's a weird connection. I never thought of that. And the other theater across
town. You are talking to a weirdo.
Hey, so am I. I never made that connection. That's awesome. I'm glad you did that. Oh, that's great. And now it's live forever. Yeah. Carol Kane has the best role in Muppet movie. It's what? A myth. A what? A myth. Myth. Yeah.
Oh man.
Doc Hopper's French fried frog legs, Charles Durning.
Yes.
It's interesting you saw the second one first. Did the original affect you?
Yes, it's just a very taut, very organized movie, and I think it's just a crowd pleaser. It's just a very straightforward crowd pleaser.
It's one of the most well-crafted films of that type ever done, and I don't think Walton gets enough credit for that.
Totally.
Just and if anybody says, yeah, but the middle's kind of boring. No, it isn't.
I've never no. Even as a kid, I don't think I would have found it boring. It's just kind of just.
He keeps the mood, even though we're following Tony Beckley's character.
Kind of like De Palma. He plays around with the lighting and have you. Kudos to the great cinematographer, Donald Peterman, probably best known for his collaborations with Gary Marshall, Ron Howard, and even getting an Academy Award nom for Star Trek IV.
Yeah, that's
right. John Hughes movies. And it just... I mean, when you see how he shoots, this is one of his earlier movies along with but the way I notice how he frames this and Get Shorty and even Point Break, he really plays a lot with shadows.
Oh, he does, especially when we're following the killer out and about in the world.
And like you, I was always paying attention to the makeup and cinematographer and editor as much as the director, but most people don't. They just look at the... a so-and-so film and the first three names.
Because some people don't even look at that anymore. Yeah.
Right. My sister will always want to skip through a movie with that credits unless it's a Marvel thing. I'm like, well, it's got a good tune. It's got some interesting credits. Like,
I always stay through the end credits of any movie. Just out of respect, even if I'm not digging the music,
just
even
to
out
say of respect. You saw the movie.
Exactly. I know it's silly, and sometimes I'm the only one sitting there, and the people waiting to clean. Yeah, people waiting to clean or standing off, like, okay, there's nothing at the end. I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'm watching. I'm doing the whole thing beginning to end. Yeah.
Did you ever see her work, Carol Kane, in the similar movie Office Killer?
Oh, I like that movie.
Yeah,
it's kind of another movie.
It's kind of another movie that's often does the rounds at 2 a.m. on Showtime.
Yeah. Little 90s VHS treasure there, Office Killer. And it was nice to see her take her quirky persona to a different level.
Oh yeah,
in that movie,
she is Mrs. Detective Machaca.
Because even though I love her as an actress, she's always the Carol Kane role, if you will.
Yeah, she's always Carol Kane from Taxi, or
she got to Jimmy have Schmidt. Some fun with Office Killer.
Yeah, she really plays around with this, and even Dog Day Afternoon is a typical kind of role, and she looks good holding a gun. So
she does, right? And also in When a Stranger Calls, she pulls off in the beginning, she's 17 years old. At the end, she's in her mid-30s, and she pulls it off. Because she's got, at the time anyway, in 1979, she had that kind of face. You pull back her hair, she's a teenager. You let her hair down, she's in her 30s. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't just mean physically. She pulls it off. She is a kind of a, not nervous, but teenager in the beginning, and she's a stoic woman at the end until she gets that phone call at the restaurant.
1,000%.
Have you checked the children? And have you checked the children?
That catchphrase, no one knows what that means now.
Yeah, and why, when I see these lists on little documentaries on Shudder and lists people make of the greatest, I mean, you get, here's Johnny, you get Here's your mother Jenny. Sucks cocks in hell. You get death has come to your small town, sheriff. Oh. All great horror movie lines. Nobody says, have you checked the children?
Hello, the children.
One of the most terrifying lines ever. Mm-hmm. It gives me chills when he says that.
Have you checked the children?
And the music during that.
They should have added. Yes, the music is delightful. Maybe they should have added, have you checked the children with some fava beans?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, he left them a little Mr. Goodbar candy bar on their pillows. No, in the opening scene, the music, it's not overdone. It's all noise. It's like, you know, she's like, hello. And it's just going, the soft, orchestration, but then he's got the dum dum dum, and she's looking around, dum dum dum, just occasionally. And then when she says, "Can you see me?" and he says, "Yes," she looks out the window, and we cut to outside of the window, and it's a big bay window that's open. And then the orchestra,
yeah,
it's so perfect. It's just so perfect.
An Imba, Bergman score almost.
Yeah, right.
So it was Donna Kaproff. I was about to say,
I don't remember the name of
not the familiar with her, but sure.
I'm not either.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
What did you think of as the dad in this young, very, very early role for Carmen Organziano?
Carmen, yeah. And shout out the great Ritania Alda as
yes.
his wife. I thought he was very good, and I like the scene where Charles
just a very realistic just father reacting to it, you know, just yeah. losing his shit.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's wonderful. I always like that guy. It's sad that he's gone now.
Stand and Deliver, Stargate SG-1, Ellie mm-hmm. Law. He's
yeah, he's a good. He was always, unfortunately, I think, because of the size of his roles and his name, for non people like us, he was always and will forever be. I like that guy.
Right.
You know? Who? That guy right yeah. there.
The bald guy.
I don't know his
Malkovich?
Name. That
no,
guy.
No, yeah, no, right. no. This guy. This yeah. this guy.
He's forever. I like that guy. And that's fine because I dug him. He's you know, he was good in that. And the scene he has with Durning later, when Durning comes and said, and we find out that he's funding Durning to watch this guy and go find him. Yeah. He's really good. They're Ron O'Neill as Durning's yes, partner,
Mr. Blaxploitation.
Great Ron O'Neill, man. I love him.
Superfly, baby.
The best Blaxploitation ever, according to Anthony. And one of the great film soundtracks ever written. Dear oh, God. Yeah.
I brought it out randomly at a party, and all my mixed pals were like, Superfly.
Yeah,
they sweet. All said it in unison.
Right. Yeah.
Fucking funny movie. You're like,
oh, yeah. I love it. It's classy. Talk about giving it to the man. And hey, there's a lot of backlash, but why are we making the hero a drug pusher? Shut up.
Super shut up. Superfly. Superfly.
And that's all you need to say. But why Superfly? Done. Argument over. No, he was great in it. Getting back to the opening.
The opening.
It is just of When a Stranger Calls, folks, just in case you got lost. It is just, I mean, I've seen it gazillions of times, When a Stranger Calls.
That's sweet.
I still, when I watch it, I'm all tense just because of what we were just saying, the way he films it, the way Walton structures that whole opening moment, the sound of the ice maker in the kitchen.
Yes, the uneasiness.
Just, yeah. And then, again, old enough to where we can talk about everything in it. During the final moment when the
I'm
cop
scared,
calls,
Anthony. I can't finish
right.
this.
We gotta stop
fucking,
talking about.
We gotta
this.
Fucking.
Let's
stop
talk about the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Hey, that scared me as a kid too. So maybe not.
Yeah.
But
it'll happen.
The famous, the famous. You know, we've traced the call. It's coming from inside the house. You know, and that's when they kick the strings like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she looks up to the stairs. And she runs to the door and for some reason forgets how to open a door and she can't get the latch off. And then the music's still going. Dun, dun, dun. She turns and looks at the stairs, cut to the stairs. Then the music goes.
Yes.
As you see the shadow of the door open and then his head, the shadow of his head pop out and then opens the door. And I remember these screams from the audience. It's a smash cut to Charles Durning's face.
The scene fades out at the same time yeah. the music's fading out.
Yeah. What a great, I mean, you can't get, in my opinion, you can't get, and I'm talking any genre, probably one of the top 2 to 3 best openings in film history for me.
Really?
It's fantastic. And then where it goes from there. You're following this guy. They let him out. What? This guy ripped apart children with his bare hands.
Yeah.
And they let him out eventually.
Beckley, just unfortunately, he reminds me of that one Canadian actor from Nikita and the X-Men, Peter Outerbridge. He just has that, I want to punch you in the face look.
Right, yeah. And at the same time, for a millisecond, in certain moments, you feel a little sorry for the guy.
Yeah.
He's trying to overcome his psycho-ness.
Totally. If this were a modern day movie, I think they would amp it up. They would make it'd be a pretentious episode of SVU or another Hannibal type movie or Cape Fear knockoff. But it's a testament, much like Cape Fear, and how people can do their best Hitchcock imitation. They don't have to be just De Palma. They can be their own essence, their own.
I agree. I agree completely. And I think Fred Walton should have had a bigger career.
He does good with the TV movies he does, but I know what you mean. You just you see other shows that he guest directed of, like Hitchcock Presents and Miami Vice, and you're like, mm-hmm. What did he piss someone off?
Yeah, exactly. But for instance, a lot of people, and we'll be talking about this more, Cameron and I, on a show in 2023. Cimino. I always say, Cimino is one of the best filmmakers to ever do it. And people always say, really? All he had in him is Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, The Deer Hunter, and you can argue all day about Heaven's Gate. And I said, yes, but let me tell you this. I would add Year of the Dragon, personally.
Oh, but totally.
After that, and I even like Desperate Hours, even though it's a mess. And I didn't like his last movie, The Sun Chaser, but whatever.
Tried so hard to watch that one. It's John Cena said, we all signed up instantly because we're all fans of his work. And then we come to set and we're like, what are we even doing?
What? I don't think you can feel it in the movie. They don't know what they're doing. But no, my opinion is this. If you can do at least two great films, you're a great filmmaker. Totally. That's my opinion. And if you do one great movie as great as The Deer Hunter, in my opinion, you're a great filmmaker.
If you can have a immortalized, rest in peace, Louise Fletcher, there's an example, someone who should have had a bigger career, but
you are correct.
Fifth stage in her life, wins the Oscar for best supporting and then, steals the show on Deep Space Nine. You've done it.
You might not
have done it the way Brad Pitt or Julia Roberts does it, but you're working.
And you gave one of the most iconic film roles of all time. I mean, seriously. And I think that might be the issue, but that's another show. I think she got pigeonholed.
It does make you wonder how fame can kind of ruin someone. Because half the time, even in the 2000s, we would see people just be mocked because their next movie wasn't 100%, especially with Charlize Theron and Halle Berry. And it's like, well, those movies were already in the can before they won.
Yeah, exactly.
Why do I care?
Murray Abraham never again did a movie as great as Amadeus, for which he won his Oscar.
Yeah, he'll always be freaking Amadeus. People might know him now for being on Mythic Quest and all these other movies and shows. And but that's freaking Amadeus. That doesn't.
Yeah, right. Yeah, one of the great performances. But my point is, we don't want to bore the audience. What's the name of this goddamn podcast, guys?
The unorganized show. Yeah,
We'll talk about Cimino later, folks. But no, my point is, and I'm not saying Fred Walton is as great as Cimino or, whatever, but
just a reasonable top guy who got it done. And
yeah, he did a great film in When a Stranger Calls, a very good one in The Rosary Murders, and a fun cult 80s horror in April Fool's Day. Why did all of a sudden nobody give a shit about funding any movies by this guy? Each one of those were successful. Rosary Murders wasn't successful here, but it made money in Canada where he filmed it.
Yeah. And Hadley's Rebellion, I hear, is kind of a sleeper drama. So it's I would always see Trapped, a DVD of that floating around, which was kind of another sleeper TV movie. Psycho in a building, preying on a worker who left late.
I saw it once, yeah.
And so it's interesting how he became the TV guy, and yet that's kind of just what people wanted to see him do, is take a simple premise, play around with the acting and the gaffing. And
it's too bad because, and I know I've already spoken about, forget about the opening moments, which are great. just if I taught a film class, I would show When a Stranger Calls, because just from beginning to end, the way he crafts it is just ridiculous. And that opening, here we go again, because that's how great it is. That opening 20 minutes or whatever, it's he's pulling it tight. He's tight. And oh, he's going to break it. And then nope.
Yeah.
It's just incredible and incredibly crafted. He knows when to do a close up. He knows when to do a wide shot. And it's flooring how great that is to me.
Everyone knows how to just kind of just go to school.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Charles Durning, we talked about him. He's wonderful in the movie. He even runs. It's nice to see him run. He runs up those.
This is before he packed on a bunch of pounds, but yeah.
Yeah. He always went up and down in his career. It's weird. Mostly up.
But, and it just makes me realize, so this is the third movie he's done with Carole King, because they were both in Dog Day Afternoon, remember?
Son of a bitch. Are they related?
Must have had the same agent.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was his first film, by the way.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. But no, he's so good in it. And I remember seeing an interview with him about the film. And I said, what drew you to this? Because you're not known for the horror genre. And he said, I read the opening scene and I called up Fred Walton and the director and said, I'm in. And he said, so you liked your part? And he said, I haven't read my part yet. He said, that opening scene on the page, if it scared me that much, it's going to be amazing on the screen. And then he said, I hung up and then read the rest of it and said, oh, I'm really in. Yeah. So that's a testament to the screenplay as well.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, the moments with Colleen Dewhurst as the woman we can't say picks up in the bar.
Yeah.
Not
a deal.
And those are the moments where I feel sorry for him. You know, he's trying to relate to someone on a human level, which is impossible for him to do. Tony Beckley's character.
Kind of progressive for 60s, wanting to have a talk, wanting to actually go for more than just what is the killer thinking, why is the killer doing this, and even if you don't get would you say we get a direct answer? I don't feel like we never truly do, but we're not really meant to. We're getting a tease, which is kind of what you would kind of expect, but no one was really doing that time. Usually they would just have a, you know, surprise, someone who you didn't expect to be evil, you know.
Or he'd be there and, you know, I said, I want to buy you a drink, you know, but it's not about that. And that's one of those moments I was speaking of when he won't leave her alone, but he's not doing it in an evil way. He's like, I'm trying to relate to somebody. I just got out of a fucking, you know, he didn't say that, but we know that's what's going on. And the bartender gets pissed at him because he won't leave Colleen Dewhurst alone. And then that other guy beats him up. And I'm like, oh, poor guy that just spent time for ripping two kids apart with his bare hands. I feel sorry for him. And I think that's the beauty of the screenplay, the beauty of the direction, and the beauty of Tony Beckley's performance. That was his last film. He died 4 months after.
Jeez.
He had cancer. He was dying when he made it, which I hate to say this in a weird way, adds to the look, because he was frail and adds to that creepy look.
Method acting, kind of.
Without trying. Yeah. Well, I got cancer. Just put a jacket on.
Frame my face. I'm fucking miserable these long days.
Oh, my God. And then when he follows her to her apartment. Remember that?
Yes.
And you're just like, and then he's still, I don't mean to scare you. I just wanted to. And then
we just want a spoon. We just want to snuggle.
She lets her guard down for just a minute, almost. I'm sorry the guy beat you up. I don't remember the line. It's been a little bit, you know, but I really can't have you in. I'm waiting on somebody. She's lying, but. Mm-hmm. And then she closes the door and looks out the keyhole, and you don't see him, but you hear noise in the hall. It's just brilliant. I mean, the more we talk about
our imagination is running rampant with every angle. And it's,
and then, of course, later he gets in.
Well, just like how Jaws was a crapshoot that made for one of the best movies, you know, using what you can't show to your advantage, you know. I'm sure this was a minor micro budget movie and they did really good with just, again, you know, music and rhythm and
framing, editing, like you said.
Framing, yes.
Yeah. And that, I'm glad you said that, rhythm. I mean, it has a rhythm.
A kinetic kind of, even when there's not any energy, there's energy.
And there's a feeling. And there's any great horror or thriller, or horror thriller, which this is.
Yeah.
Any great movie of that type, the great horror movies to me, they set their tone at the beginning and they keep that same tone all the way through till the very last
shot. They have to, yeah.
The Exorcist, Halloween, movies like that, Suspiria, both versions.
Yes.
And I think Toby Hooper's Texas Chainsaw. But I also think When a Stranger Calls belongs there. The terrifying first 20 minutes. That stays with us because we go from that to this guy getting out and following him. We're terrified. We're wondering. We're always thinking, where the hell is this going?
Right.
And then of course the finale when he stalks her again. Look, we won't look too deep into that. He didn't know who the fuck she was. So how would he know who she is now or where she is or her married name?
Maybe he thought she looked just like her. You know, it's to our mind.
We don't think about that too hard. You know, again, to a conversation we were having off mic, we don't think too hard about skin melting in an Indiana Jones film.
Just roll with it. Or the Thing, you know, scientifically accurate.
Just roll with it. It's fun.
Have fun. Just have.
But
fun.
I remember. Of course, I was young, but no matter when I see When a Stranger Calls, the scene where she's at dinner with her husband. Are you Mrs. So-and-so? Yes. Phone call. And she's like, oh, okay. Hello? Have you checked the children? Oh, my God. What a brilliant. Because it's what? 25 years later.
Oh, totally. Years before, we were having people blow up each other's phones, like. 7 or cellular or
but I mean, and then she breaks down right there at the hostess stand, falls screaming.
It's a way better deal.
Goes home and oh, go ahead.
It's a way better deal because it's just very annoying when now, you know, this is a template for all kinds of things, but it's more than that. It really is just a very taut thriller, and I think, like you say, it's going to be accepted by just about every generation. I've actually never encountered anyone who was like, it's okay, or it wasn't all that.
Me neither.
I think it's just an easygoing crowd pleaser. It's just an accessible movie.
I agree. I've never met a genre fan that doesn't love it.
Both the pretentious guys and the stuck-up guys are going
to
like it.
Right, of which I am both sides of that coin, depending on what movie we're talking about.
You're not
about.
Pretentious. Yeah. You're amazing.
Mm. Hold on, let me get my ascot and my pipe. We showed it to our son 2 years ago, so he was 12. I wanted to wait a little bit because I saw it when I was 11, and I didn't have a door in my room, and I couldn't, after seeing it, I couldn't face the wall. I couldn't have my back to my door when I went to bed, so I had to and I would lay there awake just staring at the door, waiting for his
sunrise.
Yeah, come on, go to sleep. I'm like counting sheep. 9,001. I don't know why I didn't have a door in my bed. Anyway. When I was a teenager. Anyway.
Maybe they were watching the same thing. They were too scared to do anything.
He's gonna be terrified. Let's take this off. And because I related that story. Oh no, yeah, sorry. I got my train of thought back. We waited till 12 to show it to our son. He's 14 now, and I'm like, you're 12. You might be a little, the middle might lose you a little bit, but stay with it. Focus, pay attention. And when it was over, he said, that's one of my favorite horror movies. The middle wasn't boring at all. And I'm like, my son, I love you. Yeah. Cause I will admit he's a hard sell on a lot of stuff as he gets older. but what I love is the stuff he seems to gravitate to as far as genre movies and horror films, 80s. I'm like, I'm so happy that he's gravitates towards the 80s stuff. I dig it. But no, I've never, like you said, I've never met anybody that doesn't like When a Stranger Calls. It's a great, there's so much to talk about it, but it's a, what, a sharp 128 minutes, I think, or not 120, an hour and 28 minutes. It's a sharp, fast hour and 28 minutes, but there's so much in that hour and 28 minutes. But if you think about it, only four things happen in the film, four arcs, if you think about it. You have the opening, you have the ending. You have him and Colleen Dewhurst, and then you have Charles Durning and tracking him down. and then, look, does the final moment rip off John Carpenter's final moment of Halloween? Yeah. So what? I don't care. Charles Durning comes running up the stairs. Boom, boom, boom. You know, fine. I'm happy with it. And that's also brilliant how she looks. She looks in the closet and hears his voice, and she sees the corduroy of his jacket in the closet. And she's like, he's in there. And she's like, honey. And it's him. He's laying right next to her in bed. Jesus Christ. That gets me every time. And I've seen it all, Cameron. I've seen it all.
You've seen
and
it that's all.
Still, I'm just like, here he comes. Ow! Shit, it's him again. Seen it 100 times. It's still him. It still gets me. And I love when movies do that to me, because I'm such a hard ass on movies post 1999, because everything's starting to repeat itself. And a lot of films, like we were talking about how Scream homages a few things out of When a Stranger Calls. A lot of times these days, because of Tarantino, and I'm not knocking Tarantino, but because of the way he does his homages, now people think they over homage, if you will. Like, yes. Things are, they just craft things as they an homage.
Try to do a De Palma too much, to where it's like,
and they don't have their own. Yeah, it's a good example. He homages Giallo and Hitchcock almost every time.
This is why I avoid Abrams nowadays. I'm just, but like, you took every scene and put it together with no redoing it differently. Like, I would rather watch a fan film, because if it's a fan film, now I know it's a labor of love.
But I'm on the fence about Abrams, but that's another show.
Yeah. No, I get it.
I both agree and disagree with the people who say that, because we're all right. Does he make fun movies? Yes. Does he make respectful movies? Yes. Are they all homages? Yeah. Are there too many lens flares? Yeah. But should there be lens flares in Star Wars? No. Anyway.
Man. But yeah, how much of it is a homage versus how much is a ripoff? Like, if it's Jim Wynorski, it's kind of fun to me, because I know that, like, a Roger Corman guy, he's just kind of having too much fun, and he's basically half-assing and just kind of part of the charm, in a way, kind of in a weird Tommy Wiseau, Rocky Horror kind of way. That's weird to say those two together, but
I'll roll with Rocky Horror. I don't get this whole let's celebrate the room business. I can't do it.
No,
I love the riff tracks about it, but
it's amazing. The only version you've seen. But yeah, and then, like, De Palma, like, he riffs. He and Curtis Hanson loved Hitchcock so much and do a damn good job. They made it their signature. So it's. Yeah.
And Giallo for De Palma. I've said many times.
Giallo, yes.
People say, name your 15 favorite Giallo films. I'll throw Dress to Kill in there. And they'll be like, wait, no, Giallo films. I'm like, oh, it's very much a Giallo movie. You got the leather, you got the blade, you got the leather killer, you got the sexuality. You know, you tell me he's not doing an American Giallo film.
He really is. He was spotted at various Italian cinemas often growing up. And
oh, sure. He's got some Argento in him and some Bava.
Bava, yeah. That's a good contrast. Yeah, Bava is another one who's kind of being rediscovered. A lot of the Giallo guys are being rediscovered, because now their movies are, you can afford to find them all.
Yeah. And that Shudder. I don't know if you have Shudder. I own a ton of giallo movies, but if you want to do a dive, Shudder, they've got a lot of great ones on there. Yep. It's fantastic. See, folks, this
Shout Factory has some.
Yeah. Oh, they have, yeah. And Arrow does a good job with the giallo movies. But no,
totally. Turner Classic Movies plays some on Cult Friday.
Yeah. But that's a good point. You can homage, but you have to have your own thing in the middle of it.
Your own reason doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Scream did it right. Wes Craven's first Scream.
Because Wes Craven was a psychological guy. Yeah. He was a psychologist before he came to
you. Yeah, he was. And a cab driver, by the way.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he said he did it for a weekend. He said, nope. I think it was after high school or something. He was like, yeah. That's an interview I always wanted to get that I regret not getting.
Oh, man. Wes Craven. One of these days, we'll resurrect him from the grave.
We'll do the show.
5,000 years later.
Yeah. Yes. So, Wes, tell me if you remember. Yeah. But no, Scream did the homage to When a Stranger Calls correctly. They didn't just do When a Stranger Calls. They just crafted the opening like that. And I thought it worked perfectly. I think it's brilliant. And it's way more brutal than When a Stranger Calls. There's blood in the original When a Stranger Calls, but it is on the bed sheets. You don't see the kids ripped up. You don't see knives going in anybody. Even when he gets shot, you really don't see any because it's a close up on him. And he goes over.
I mean, yeah, it was coming off of the 60s, but it still had kind of the mentality of, you know, we want to show a cop who's on the edge, but we don't want to do a hard-boiled cop movie. We want to show a killer, but we want to keep him mysterious. We don't want to be exploitive, and we want to have a mask. He doesn't have a mask.
We get to know him as a person.
The heroine is strong and trying to keep her cool while being very humanly realistic.
Yeah. I still think of the opening, when I talk about the opening of When a Stranger Calls, I think of her, of course, her fantastic, why wasn't she nominated for an Oscar performance? But through a lot of it, she grabs, once she knows somebody keeps calling, she goes over to the fireplace and grabs a poker, and it has like a round edge to it on the handle. And a lot of the times when she's on the phone, she's just holding that poker and turning it. And I that's an image from the movie to me. And she's surrounded by darkness and a few soft lights. Never understood why she didn't turn all the lights on, but close the curtains.
I think she, being afraid is a dangerous thing.
So. Oh, I know. Yeah. And I mean, I guess you don't want the lights on once you know he can see you outside, but. Yeah, no, it's a great.
By the time you turn it on, you'll be dead.
Yeah, it's really a great movie, and you just after it's all said and done, you're like, my God, if she would have. There's one scene where she goes halfway up the stairs, and then the phone rings, and she goes back down. She would have died. It's just, I think it's one of the great horror films. I think it's one of the best movies.
Probably one of the more mainstream ones. But
yeah, definitely.
It was like on a few movie channels like a year ago, but I haven't seen it play much.
It's not, and I have a Blu-ray copy of it.
Which one? I saw there was a Shout and there was an Umbrella. Which release do you have?
Yes. I have them both.
You have them all.
Including the little VHS slipcover that Columbia Pictures does with a lot of their Blu-rays. But it still could use a big transfer with a lot of extras on it would be nice.
Yeah, that's what I saw. It's like there's different features on each release, so you might have to buy the same movie 3 times.
Yeah. It's weird. No, like you said, it's rarely shown. Nobody talks about it. The Blu-ray releases didn't set anything on fire, but at the time it was a huge hit. I mean, it wasn't Star Wars numbers, but it was a big hit.
Doesn't need it to be good. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm just saying, a movie that was that big and people talked about all through the 80s. Oh my God, have you seen Rent When a Stranger Calls? But it just kind of vanished from people's memory. And I don't understand why, frankly. It's a great film. I guess you could say it was
an antenna channel movie, I guess.
I mean, respectable kind. Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah. But I mean, if you do that much business theatrical and you have that big of an impact, and on when it hit HBO, forget about it.
Oh, yeah.
What am I, Italian? Forget about it. It's just everybody, come over, spend the night. We'll watch When a Stranger Calls. It's on at 11.
Have a few laughs. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the 90s, people are like, eh, whatever. Like, what happened? He even had a sequel in the 90s. Why are we not talking about it?
It began like any other night.
Hello?
Until the phone went dead. A stranger stepped out of the dark.
Who is it?
And a reign of terror begins.
He was inside the house with her.
It's eerie, isn't it?
She was badly traumatized.
Paranoid delusions.
It's too much for her. She's coming apart.
I believe her.
Are you sure she hasn't created something that isn't there?
What is happening is real.
Explanations are getting pretty hard to come by.
You don't mistake those things, and the terrifying thing is, he knows you don't.
He is out there somewhere. He will go after someone else.
I'm sorry, sir. There seems to be some problem.
Jill. I'm here, Jill.
Where are you?
We're all alone now.
Carol Kane, Charles Durning, When a Stranger Calls Back.
I do not know.
Makes me sad, but wait till I'm 70. Why aren't they talking about?
You notice we haven't talked about the forgettable remake at all.
Well, we touched on it at the beginning, but we can talk about it.
I don't remember at all after seeing it like just once. I think the big selling point was, oh, Lance Henriksen's the voice of the killer. Oh.
Yeah, and he does very well. The opening sequence, it's Fred Walton again directing. He tries to get the oomph of the opening like he did in the original. Doesn't get it. But that said, or as Jeff Goldblum says, Jill Schoen's really good in it, and the opening is effective. It's creepy, but not in the masterful way we're talking about the original. But it's creepy. It has a nice creep factor. Guy at the door trying to get in because his car's something, you know, and she's alone, and there's a path, and it's effective, but not chilling, if you will. It's just that was a creepy opening. The whole just middle
too hard to be like Texas Chainsaw and Scream, I guess. You know?
Yeah. The whole middle, because he tries to do it again. We follow, but he doesn't follow the guy as much as Tony Beckley. We follow Carol Kane. She's now empowered. You know, she's teaching a defense class.
And
Charles Durning's back, kind of for no reason. They're still friends. They're still in touch.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when they figure out who it is, Carol Kane goes to his apartment and he's got this fake brick wall, you know, the brick wallpaper, but he's painted himself like the wallpaper and he just disappears into it until he opens his eye and we're supposed to be, and I'm like, what? That's ridiculous. It's the Rambo First Blood Part 2 problem I have with that. And the scene where he's completely covered in mud and reaches out and kills the guy. How'd he cover his hand? You still got the one hand. How do you cover that up? But anyway, it's a ridiculous ending.
Stuff dating.
So middle and a decent opening. I mean, if you love to anyone who sees or has seen the original When a Stranger Calls, I recommend the sequel. But as Siskel and Ebert used to say, and I said to you a while ago, my thumb is sideways. It's not garbage, but Gene, it's not necessarily, it's not necessarily a recommendation, but there's a couple things in it. It was made for Showtime. I think
more like show me. topless time.
Yeah, it came in. Yeah, that
would have been hysterical. Zalman King presents.
Yeah, Zalman King's When a Stranger Calls. Joel Schoen would have had a different performance.
Nerd by the company.
Zalman King, he deserves a show, except I'd sound like a grump on it. So kind of why do it? I'm like, what the hell was he thinking?
I'll let you know what our Skinamax special is.
Yeah.
No joke.
Hey, at least we get to talk about 9.5 weeks on them. but no, I mean, When a Stranger, and the title
nine
is
Nine and a Half Strangers Call Back.
9.5 Strangers Call Back.
That's the parody.
that's funny. No, the title to the sequel is stupid. When a Stranger Calls Back. That's just a dumb, you know, just, I know it's semantics, but the same guy's not going to call back. A Stranger Calling is not calling back. I hate the title. It's stupid. You know, When a Stranger Calls 2 would have been just fine. I don't know.
I kind of like it. I just don't like being number two.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But number one, When a Stranger Calls, the original 79, I think it's for what it's doing, I think it's a perfect film. I really have no issue with the film whatsoever. It's masterfully structured from beginning to end. And quite terrifying.
Totally. I mean, we're at that point where we have what we have. And thank God, you know, it left an impression.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I love being the age I am. We don't need to say it on the air. And still being creeped out when I watch it. I love that because I've seen it all. Nothing gets me anymore. And that one still, because as I'm watching it with the lights off, I go back in my head to when I first saw it as a 12-year-old, 11-year-old, 12-year-old, whatever. And then watching it on HBO as a teenager, just with friends and girlfriends.
Did it ever come on Cinemax?
I don't think it did. I don't know. It might have. I don't know.
You gotta have some quality on there once.
I couldn't see it through the squiggle lines. Yeah.
no one who owned a VHS player is gonna get that. But
I was gonna say anybody over the who wasn't born before.
All they know about now is oh, it's not on 1080 setting. Oh, got to go to video two.
Yeah.
That's all they know.
Like, you guys don't know the struggle of trying to see one boob for 2 seconds.
The best thing in the world.
is the squiggle. And then when your parents said,
My parents are asleep.
I know. Well, then when your parents said, hey, we have Cinemax now. Yes. You take a nap so you can sneak downstairs in the wee hours. I'm watching Skinamax. No, When a Stranger Calls, I'm sure it did, because HBO Cinemax are the same guys.
Oh, yeah, they probably had Strangers Calling for the movies.
Yeah. Right, yeah, exactly.
When a Stranger Calls Back on their cable bill. What the fuck?
Yeah. I didn't remember anything.
So if you did a horror comedy, what scene from this movie would you spoof?
Hmm.
Besides, obviously, the phone conversations.
Yeah. from the original When a Stranger Calls, if I did a horror comedy, I would spoof the finale.
Oh, nice.
Because I would do something, because he leaves candy bars. And then he's in the closet, but he's not in the closet, he's next door. I would do something silly there. I don't know.
I would be a bastard. I would say, he ripped a kid open. No, really, he ripped it open.
Yeah, right. Dude, how did you do that?
It's the fucking Hulk. You just have two inappropriate detectives in the hallway.
Yeah, like, he did what?
And the chief just fires him by throwing his badge at their face.
Yeah, really. But wait, chief, don't you want to know how he did it? He's a skinny little Englishman. What the hell are you? Yeah. I love it how, if you go back and watch Revenge of the Pink Panther, a return. I don't remember whatever one was from 75.
I think I know.
Whatever one he dressed as the Italian mobster. Tony Beckley is one of the bad guys. And he's always around during goofy things. And mind you, my dad, after I first saw When a Stranger Calls, because we used to watch the Pink Panther movies all the time.
You were wise.
And he said, you know who that killer is? And whenever it was on TV, he's like, that's him. And I would, and I could never look at Tony Buckley in the Pink Panther movie ever again. I'm like, he creeps me out. Yeah. He's, I think Tony Buckley gave an award-worthy performance as the killer. I thought he was great.
Yeah, I have yet to see any of those actors get hated upon. And kind of like Anthony Perkins and even the director, they just didn't have as long a career, or they had to make a typecast work. But
yeah,
I mean, they're still pretty jamming.
Yeah, Perkins is a good example. Yeah,
I wish they could have done a convention scene. I know it was kind of taboo back then and just got accepted decades later. But I mean, really, it's just everybody wins.
What scene? I'm sorry.
A convention scene.
Oh yeah. That would have been great.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? Hey, I got my When a Stranger Calls Blu-ray signed by Tony Beckley and Charles Durning.
Oh man.
No, anybody who hasn't seen the original When a Stranger Calls, there's a remake that we just pretend isn't out there. Number one, it's in a glass house. Number two, it's cell phones. And number three, you see the killer immediately, and he's not like a psycho killer. He's trying to get some kind of loot.
And he's not even voiced by the same person.
Yeah. He's trying to get some kind of loot buried in the house or something. I don't know. That's fucking ignorant. I love the actor, Tommy Flanagan. Everybody will know him from Sons of Anarchy, but he's ridiculous, and it's a ridiculous movie. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't seen the original When a Stranger Calls, see it. Like we both said, we've never met anybody who doesn't like it. And I tell you, I don't care how many horror movies you've seen, young'uns, if you watch this at home with the lights off and a bowl of popcorn in your lap, the opening 20 minutes will terrify you. I assure you of that.
Yeah. I mean, and why deny yourself that? It just seems like so many like to just ruin a movie for themselves.
Yeah. And it's a movie that doesn't have one jump scare in it, yet is scary. And I love that. That makes me happy, man.
Totally. Mm. It seems like, again, we just got people ruining stuff for each other.
Oh, yeah. I like occasional jump scares, but now movies are just made full of jump scares. I hear people so many times telling me, oh, that movie was scared me to death. I jumped 50 times. No, it didn't scare you. It startled you 50 times.
Yeah.
You're not scared.
The movie's not slow. It's a slow burn. Okay, yeah. Tell the difference. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what When a Stranger Calls is. It's kind of a roller coaster in reverse. It starts with the drop and then ends with the climb up. and then gives you one last drop at the end. I just think it's a phenomenal film. I can't say, as you can tell, can't say enough good about it. And apparently you either. We are in agreement on this one.
We're not going to do an episode on here if I just feel like we can't like sum it up to some extent and even just have fun with it.
Yeah, I mean,
I was on another guy's podcast yesterday, and we were talking to the Saw franchise. Can't stand that saga. I'm not a torture porn guy, but we found as positive as we could, just dissecting, no pun intended, Spiral. It was just like, well, this is why we do movies like this. You just find as much as you can, because just about anybody has already said what doesn't work about it. And we're just like, why did people want to see this even when they were bitching about it before it even came out? just try to find the logic. That's more fun going for that maze.
Spiral, I tell you. When people ask me what doesn't work about it, I have to quote Roger Rabbit when he says, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways. He's like, 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000. Oh, I hated Spiral. I tell you, I confess that as long as I put my mind in the retro of when I first saw it, I really liked the first Saw. And they get gradually worse and worse and worse every... And because I'm a loving father, our son is a movie fan. Horror is his favorite genre. he calls himself the horror kid still. And his whole, if you walk into his bedroom, it's wonderful. It's like a shrine to horror. It's wonderful. But he's been wanting to see Saw since he was 9. And we said, nope. I mean, we'll let him see some things, but not others. He's 14 now.
We'll show you a PG-13 version of Romero. It's ketchup. Right. Don't worry.
But he's 14 now. So earlier this year, he and I, because my wife said, I'm not sitting through that shit again. He and I said, okay, you can see the Saw franchise now. So we watched them all together over a week or so.
Oh boy.
Oh, I'd forgotten how bad the rest of them were. I mean, the first one's dated, not dated. I don't like that phrase, but it's reserved. Been so run into the ground that I don't enjoy it anymore, but it's still, I liked it when it came out. It's a good film. I can't say negative, but oh my God, it's like each one said, well, the last one sucked. Could we suck more? Let's try. They're actively trying to get worse and worse.
You can understand when it's something like Night of the Demons or Friday the 13th, when this just loses me, because I'm like, so I don't have anyone to connect to. I'm sorry. Even as a guy who likes gore, I'm just like, I need something to just follow it around.
I'm a huge gore fan, and I agree, same thing. I have no connection to this thing, and it's the same thing over, and then the people who become the next killer gets more ridiculous and more ridiculous. And I really thought Spiral was going to be something. I'm like, well, fuck, they got Chris Rock, they got Sam Jackson, something's gonna work here, and nope, it's terrible. It is terrible. But you know what isn't terrible? The original Stranger Calls is not. That is a great film. And there you have it. Yeah. Have we talked it out? We might have.
I think we have hit the nail on the head, and we're just now doing our best to just kind of,
well, we're not just padding, folks. One conversation leads to the next, and we brought it back to When a Stranger Calls. Yeah.
And the stranger calls back on his refund.
I saw it for free and I wanted to refund. No, it's not that bad. It's just, no, it's not very good. Watch the opening and shut it off. That's my recommendation for the second one. Watch the opening and shut it down, and you'll be okay. You'll be just fine. The bad thing is Carole Kane gives a great performance. It's just a dumb movie. So. What do you do? I don't know
why I thought it was a USA Network movie. I guess it's because it was,
might as well have been.
It was produced by Universal TV, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sure they might have showed it, because there was a time when they actually showed stuff, but no, it was made for Showtime. But it looks, you know what? It looks like a made for USA Network movie. You know what? Another movie I say about that. That's, by the way, a lot of people won't get that reference because they don't do movies anymore. But another movie that I said about that is, and I hate to say it because I like the director, Carl Franklin's Out of Time with Denzel Washington. Oh, that looks like a USA TV movie circa 1994-5.
Yeah, with CSI graphics and edits. And
yeah.
Dialogue.
And it's just, everything's overlit. It's the middle of the night and you can read a book.
Not produced by Jerry Bruckheimer.
Not produced, yeah. The camera doesn't sway so much.
You're doing your best knockoff of My Beating Blue.
I don't like the film, and I always said that looks like a USA movie. It's really cheap. But
just like this movie. Oh no, it's good. This movie was fine. It was not cheap.
What, When a Stranger Calls Back?
Oh, just like the bad movies you're referencing. This movie was fine.
No,
it might be
fine.
A little budget for $70, but it's pretty damn good.
Oh yeah, When a Stranger Calls. When a Stranger Calls, no budget. And look what they did. Hey, Fred Walton to me proved himself a good genre director.
We'll do an episode on him. Hell, let's do it.
And why not? And I own three of his movies, so what are you gonna do? I wonder how many people can say I own three Fred Walton movies. Here's the answer to that. I own three Fred Walton movies. Who?
Who? Who?
He's a director. He is.
Did they say like Pacino? Who? What are you talking? Get out.
That's another show. Yeah, he overacts, but he's still Al Pacino.
Yeah, so yes, you can't take the Pacino.
You can't take the great out of the actor, but you can take the mellow out of the actor.
Oh, hey,
yeah. Calm down, Al. You know what it is? He did it a little bit. Everybody says it started in Scent of a Woman. He did it all the way through almost Heat, and he got great reviews, and everybody loved him. And he said, "Well, I'm going to do it all the time."
I didn't find out until years later that's supposed to be him high
on cocaine,
cane, and then one person said nicotine. It's like, I think you got your drugs mixed up, reviewer. But
Pacino that said that. He said, "I played him like," he said, "I think Vincent Hanna did cocaine." And I'm like, did you discuss it with Michael Mann first? Maybe not.
I think
maybe
he just loved working with you, and he just let you do the gum because everyone chews gums back, especially back in the 90s.
I love the scene where he's talking to Tone Loke, and he gets pissed off that he doesn't have any information, so he gets up to leave. And Tone Loke references Tom Sizemore, and he sits down, he's chewing his gum. He's like, "Say what? Say what? Say what?" Well, you could see the drool in his mouth.
Oh God! Don't you love just looking for bloopers and contrary and stuff? Like the directors and actors will be at a panel and they'll start disagreeing with one another subtly, and we, the audience, see every angry reaction on, like, say, Ridley Scott's face or someone else.
Yeah, he's like, "That's not what I meant."
Well, this is what the screenwriter meant. Oh, it's what the actor meant. Ah.
Yeah. Well, there's a real quick famous story about, not famous, but story about that.
Infamous, famous.
Annabella, infamous. I spoke with Annabella Sciorra. And
Annabelle Sciorra, yeah.
Yeah, she.
Annabelle Sciorra.
One of my favorite movies is Jungle Fever. One of my favorite Spike Lee movies is Jungle Fever. They did not get along at all. It was a contentious, her and Spike Lee.
It was a contentious
relationship.
I heard the same with Rosie Perez, but I always thought, well, Rosie Perez is kind of a diva, kind of like Spike.
Probably, yeah.
But so funny how
Spike Lee wrote her character that she was attracted to him because of his blackness. Annabella Sciorra played the character like she was falling in love with him. And at the end of every scene, he'd be like, "I like what you did there, but you're not in love with him. You're showing too much emotion." And she's like, "But that's what it says on the page." And Lee's like, "That's not what it says on the..." And they would always argue. And he says, "But I got a great performance out of her, so I don't really care that she did it the wrong way." So I thought that was kind of cool. I think that's one of the coolest examples of actor and director not being on the same page, but it working out.
They got the same storyline or idea. So it's just like,
I mean, to be fair, it would have been too, and I love Spike Lee, but I think it would have been too on the nose if she fell in love with him, or not fell in love with, fell for him, was attracted to him just because of his blackness.
Yeah.
That's too on the nose with what you're trying to do. I think it makes it more interesting that she was falling in love with him. And then it becomes about race.
I don't know.
But what do I know? I'm not as good as Spike Lee. So I can't make these calls.
It seems like everyone's got the same idea, and it's just different edits, different cuts, different timeline.
Like when Fred Walton accepted the screenplay for When a Stranger Calls Back. He said, "Well, I can do something with this." "No, not really. You tried, Fred, but you didn't."
At the same time, who else were they going to call?
That's true, if you'll forgive the pun. Who called back, Fred Walton?
I walked into that.
You did. Who are they going to call?
Yeah. The killer from Phone Booth. Oh.
Yeah, right. It's another underrated movie, in my opinion.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was actually had. We were talking Spielberg's Alien trilogy, and we somehow got started on just underrated movies that were shouldn't have worked, but they did. And somehow one person was like, oh, maybe they should have had a different voice for the killer. I'm like, no, it was just right.
Yeah, it worked fine. I was trying to hop on that and I wasn't able to.
It's all good. We're only going to do 5 billion other chats.
Oh my God. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like we're never going to talk about Steven Spielberg.
We'll keep doing this even if we're canceled.
And look, to all of you who are listening, nobody's going to see The Fablemans. I would like to request that you go see The Fablemans while it's still in theaters.
Please see it.
It's a film that needs to be seen on the big screen, not because it's spectacle, but when you see it, you'll understand why. It's my little On When a Stranger Calls episode pitch for The Fablemans.
Pitch for The Fablemans.
In my opinion, as of this moment, I still have about 5 movies to see. The best film of 2022.
Bingo.
So.
All right. Well,
so go see go see The Fablemans. When you get home, watch When a Stranger Calls.
You have just heard from Anthony Nutkalitas.
That's right. Yes.
A different kind of awesome Anthony.
You have heard from Anthony Francis.
He has sang his song. He has locked and loaded. He has essentially summed up what makes him a genre fan.
Indeed. Yeah. In talking about one film, I summed up everything that works for me in the genre because it's almost all in there. And When a Stranger Calls.
It speaks.
It speaks to me. Right. But when we're talking about When a Stranger Calls Back, then you can quote Bride of Frankenstein, "We belong dead."
We belong together.
This is a fun one, Cameron. Absolutely. I enjoy this. It's always fun, mind you. Don't take that.
Yeah,
fun.
But no, thank you. This was... I just knew it was going to be a party and I don't want it to end, but we unfortunately
have to. I will be back for after the first of the year.
Yes.
There's some fun stuff.
Followed by James Vaughn.
Anthony will return. Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you for owning the conversation.
I look forward to the next one.
Totally. It gets lonely here.
I'll be back. To coin a phrase.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jack-